CinemaSins has a fan club. It's called the Sin Club, and members get all sorts of things like early episodes, bonus videos, merch discounts, and even monthly bonus podcasts. Membership starts at $3 a month, and you can sign up now at patreon.com/CinemaSins.
Once you have a whole network of spies, you definitely want to keep the antidote to their mind control in the same location where you're training them.
Right.
I think that's just good business.
Yeah, that's what I was sitting there going, why was this antidote ever made?
Welcome to Sincast, presented by CinemaSins.
All right, everybody, welcome to the Sincast. This is Chris Atkinson from CinemaSins, joined by Barrett Sher.
Hello!
And Jonathan Watkins.
Hello, hello.
And today we're going to be doing a mini-pod.
Mini-pod!
On Black Widow. The movie came out and made about $80, $90 million, somewhere around there in the theaters, and it allegedly made $60 million on Disney Plus, although we have our doubts.
Okay, so that $60 million is the premium price of a ticket, which is around $30,
yes.
Right? That's what it's counting, not new subs or anything like that. Just that.
And they're saying at least 2 million households bought that ticket, which is, I don't think that's terrible. I mean, we still don't know how there's not a third party in this.
Yeah, I know.
Where, you know, where there's like box office, like when theaters report how much money they made on a certain movie.
I can confirm that I was one of them. So we know one person paid $29.99.
Yeah,
but Black Widow did really well. It's a pandemic era record, and we're going to be seeing a lot of these set, you know,
yeah.
once movies start becoming normal again. And maybe this is as high as it gets. Who knows? I mean, we don't know enough at this point. But
well, there's not really another movie, right, coming out this summer that is of this pedigree.
No,
I guess
there's nothing that will touch this, probably. I mean, there's stuff with interest, but it won't do what this did.
What did F9 do?
70.
Okay, so it's around, because we were kind of thinking that F9 would be that breakthrough.
Yeah,
and I guess
it kind of was. And then I thought Black Widow would hit 100 million, and technically it did.
Yeah.
As far as people going out in the theaters and everything like that, I mean, $80-90 million is still
ain't nothing
pretty
to shake your dick at.
Yeah, exactly.
No, I think that's good. And the Fast and Furious, you know, the last one I made 90. So honestly, you know, a ninth sequel in a franchise when the last one made 90, it making $20 million less isn't, that's not terrible by any means. That's probably about what it would have done.
Yeah.
You know?
And here's something that I don't really know. What are they considering this the sort of the, I don't know what you would want to call it. In the MCU phases, this was still considered phase 4.
It has to be, because it's between Civil War and Infinity War.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how they're going to categorize it, but I think they have to, according to the timeline, because nothing extracurricular except for maybe the end credits scene really happens here. It's a very insular story within that thing. It's like if Captain Marvel was basically its own thing, mm-hmm. but it was also, you know, within that phase 4.
I think Florence Pugh will be back. I guess we got an introduction to her character maybe. But other than that, yeah, I mean, and I guess Harbor could be back too. I don't know. But like you said, I agree with Barrett. I think I don't know. And I don't know. I guess they have come out and started calling this moving forward phase 4. But I haven't even, I don't know. So
I'm sorry. I should mean phase 3.
I said phase 4.
I got you. Yeah.
So this would be part of phase 3, but it's a sandwiched in movie. It's a movie they made because they were getting flack. I think the same goes for Captain Marvel, by the way. They've sandwiched that one into the Avengers stuff so they could put her in and then show that, hey, we're looking forward with women and everything. It's like, well, you did it after a whole bunch of people called you out on it.
Yep.
And Black Widow was sort of a token thing that they decided to throw in, where it's like, yeah, you're right, she should have her own story and everything. I don't know how the fuck she gets into this mess after Civil War and just before Infinity War.
And it never comes up.
It never comes up. But anyway, we are going to look at this movie on its own. What is its quality without thinking about all the other chapters and everything?
I think that was one thing I liked about this, though, was that it did feel like maybe there weren't there weren't stakes as far as like, obviously we know that Black Widow is still around for a minute after this. But I just like this is kind of what I was hoping the TV shows would be, where we're just kind of getting these side adventures at different points in the timeline. And it's not so focused on like what's going to continue. You know, in the MCU moving forward, the Marvel Cinematic Universe, however you want to, you know, whatever you want to put that. But I think that was one aspect of this that actually carried my interest a little more, because I didn't have to sit there and think about like what this was tying into and so on and so forth. It wasn't as exhausting as some of these later movies have been.
Right. Totally. Well, and I think also the thing about Black Widow is a little bit more refreshing is that we got into, obviously, you know, it was meant to be this way. When we got into superheroes with magic and we went into space and they have their own forms of magic and all this, and everything is just on this whole completely different scale where it's just like, there's just so much going on, so many powers and so many things. It was kind of a relief to get to a point where there's not somebody that has any magical powers.
Yeah, human story. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. And nobody in this has anything like that.
Yeah. And I've always been more of the grounded superhero kind of fan anyway. So this is really more my speed, the magic and stuff. At some point, I don't understand who has what power and why this person's more powerful than the other one, you know? Mm-hmm. I just have an easier time being like, you know, I mean, this is still very like punchy and all that kind of stuff, but I don't know, this always will interest me a little bit more for whatever reason. So
mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay, well, we're in the non-spoiler section. I'm trying to think of some things we can talk about outside of the spoilers, but
I mean, performances.
Yeah, I'm glad a lot of people are finally coming around. Well, not that they had any real convincing to be made, but I think people are finally recognizing Florence Pugh as a superstar.
Mm-hmm.
The movies that I've seen her in, I mean, I fell in love with her in Midsommar because she just plays that role incredibly real. She is great in Little Women.
Fighting with My Family or whatever that was called.
Fighting with My, yeah, that one is another great one. This one, there's some moments in this movie I can't really replicate what she's doing, but she makes just like the tiniest bit of a noise or something like that when she's responding to somebody. I've never really seen anything like that before.
She adds
things to her character that I've not seen a lot of people do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And she becomes again more real to me and more relatable than anybody.
She's the most Scarlett Johansson, who also produced this or helped produce it, does get a chance to shine. Mm-hmm. I think we're past the point where we just think of her as a pretty face. Mm-hmm. You know, when she was introduced in Iron Man 2, that's what she was literally as a character until she, you know, broke off the Black Widow stuff. But now after Jojo Rabbit and Marriage Story and you know, I think I knew it back in Ghost World and Lost in Translation.
Oh, sure. Yeah, Man Who Wasn't There.
She's come a long way even from there. Yeah, Man Who Wasn't There. Match Point. I mean, she has some chops, and she's finally able to really deliver them. I always thought that scene with her and Banner, as touching as that was in Age of Ultron, where she mentions the Red Room and what they do to you and everything, felt a little artificial to me.
Mm-hmm.
Just even though she's a talented actress, Mark Ruffalo obviously is a brilliant actor, it just didn't fit right there.
I'm going to tell you something. after rewatch, this is going to come, you can just feels like it's coming out of left field, right?
Okay.
After watching Buffy and the Vampire Slayer.
Yes, yes. Buffy and the Vampire Slayer?
Buffy and the Vampire Slayer. Wait,
was that like the, that was like the Canadian ripoff? Was that what that was?
Yeah, it's the Canadian ripoff.
See, it's and. It's not a boot. It's not a boot. Dun, Buffy dun, 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 dun,
dun. That's right.
Mine was dun, 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 dun.
Right, right. Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
Our bodies come in different shapes and sizes, so doesn't it make sense that our weight loss plans should too? That's the beauty of Noom. They build a personal plan that factors in dietary restrictions, medical issues, and other personal needs so your plan works for you. Noom doesn't restrict or shame when you want to treat yourself. Their flexible program focuses on progress instead of perfection. You don't have to give up carbs or anything. And with their daily lessons, you can learn something new about your food choices every day. After just a few days of using the app, I learned how to recognize cues for overeating and how to choose the right foods to feel full. Stay focused on what's important to you with Noom's psychology and biology-based approach. Sign up for your trial today at Noom.com. That's Noom.com. And check out Noom's first ever cookbook, The Noom Kitchen, for 100 healthy and delicious recipes to promote better living. Available to buy now wherever books are sold.
Buffy the Vampire Slayer, there's a lot of scenes in there where Joss Whedon does these female-centric mm-hmm. jokes, like Paul Reubens sneaking up behind Buffy and going, is there a time that you don't feel also fresh and all that?
Yep.
And just talking about her cramps being a big deal and all that. And then we get into this area of Avengers movies and everything, and there's all this, you know, he got a lot of flack about her saying that she felt like a monster, that she couldn't have children, and,
right.
and all these are little tone deaf things. And then of course you hear about the stuff that Joss Whedon is being accused of at this mm-hmm. point and everything. Yeah, of course it felt artificial. It felt yeah. like somebody who doesn't know what the fuck they're talking about.
And maybe this is, I don't know if this would be more to talk about in spoilers, but you know, they definitely address the, you know, what was done to their bodies. And it's in such it feels more authentic, right? It feels like a more of a real type of scene, although it still is able to be like a kind of a humorous moment in a weird way. And I don't know, it's just handled. It's like, it's 180 from the way that same topic was handled. And, you know, was that what the first Avengers or Age of Ultron, whichever it was, but.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, what can you say? It's you have females in charge of this movie, and you have, you know, you have that they're the leads. They have we have a director, Kate Shortland, is here. I mean, of course it sounds completely different. I don't know what the actual. You know, way it is that makes it seem like it's more real
mm-hmm.
because obviously Whedon is trying even though he's failing.
I mean, there's really no way. I mean, from what I understand with the production of this, it was a very collaborative experience. Now, Kate Shortland, the director, I had not seen Lore, which was apparently her real, I think it was at Cannes and really, stirred the pot there and everybody loved it mm-hmm. and Scarlett Johansson loved it. Part of the reason that she really, you know, recruited her for this film. Yeah. I don't think there's any way that you can replicate, you know, her, Florence Pugh and Scarlett Johansson all getting together and doing this collaboratively. I think it was Jack Schaefer that came up with the story. And then it was Eric Pearson that got the screenplay credit. But yeah, it seems like by and large, the end product on the screen was a result of females. That whole scene that Jonathan was alluding to, from my understanding, was not improv, but it was suggested by Florence Pugh to say, like, you know what, we're going to make this matter of fact and mm-hmm. you know, straightforward the way that someone who is responding to trauma would do.
Mm-hmm. And it's such a well done scene because you have David Harbour trying to be like fatherly. And trying to be sympathetic, and everything he's saying is absolutely wrong. And he has no business saying, you know, he has no business even trying to be their father. And And then you just have Florence Pugh reacting to that. And it's just, it's beautiful. Like it's a great little moment in a pretty good movie.
Yeah. And obviously David Harbour and Rachel Weisz are fantastic. It's funny. I did not know Rachel Weisz was in this movie. At the very beginning, when they've digitally altered their appearances and everything, I was like, oh, she looks like Rachel Weisz. And then about halfway through it, I was like, this is Rachel Weisz, isn't it?
I will say this was the first time, though, I knew she was in it. And I honestly couldn't figure out if that was a different person, if that was a different actor at first. So I think that does say something about how this technology is coming along, which is also kind of creepy. But
yeah, it is.
I didn't really notice. I mean, she looks so great just now.
Yeah, that's true.
I didn't even really notice a whole lot of de-aging on her. Like, she doesn't need the work.
No, and that Samuel might be part Jackson of it. Needs. Right. Well, like, even right. David Harbour. I mean, David Harbour, they were just kind of going more with, like, the hair and stuff, because he still pretty much looked the same. And then when he's older, they gave him, like, the beard and everything. So
it's so interesting. Like, I remember seeing David Harbour in, like, what was the Denzel Washington movie? The Equalizer.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I remember seeing him and stuff like that before, and then he had his breakout with Stranger Things. I didn't know if he would appeal beyond Stranger Things.
Yeah.
And so far he has.
Yeah.
I mean, even that, that Hellboy movie he was in wasn't good, but he was awesome in
it. You watched it?
We send it.
Oh, we send it.
Yeah, and we gave a send-off for his performance. We actually gave a send off for his performance, because Chris and I were both talking about that. We were sending it like, this movie sucks, but he's so good. And like, it really made you mad that the movie wasn't as good as he was. You know,
he's someone who's able to he's a giant of a man. And he's somehow able to just drum up all this humor and power all at once. And he's just insanely likable.
What's weird is that, you know, he plays off of Millie Bobby Brown in Stranger Things so well, and he plays off of Florence Pugh in particular in this movie so well, which is crazy because there's maybe a foot and a half difference between the two of them or something like that. And same thing with Millie Bobby Brown. So maybe he's just got this, warmth, even with a stoic, big man in this role. Like, he's got this warmth that makes you want to kind of root for
him. And I think he makes that character, because that character, just the way it's written, I don't think is very interesting at all. It's very like Russian mobster Russian big man, stereotype kind of thing, but he makes it.
Ray Winstone leads into that. And
talk about somebody I didn't recognize, by the way.
He kind of botches the accent a few times. But you know what? Nobody plays menacing like Ray Winstone.
That's true. I kept on thinking, like, what? A Yunya period?
All the time. The entire fucking time I was thinking that.
This is the first time I've noticed that accent's going in and out so much in a movie before. It reminds me of when Chernobyl series came out. The creators there basically just said, everybody just talk in your usual accent.
Yeah.
I mean, we all know this is Russian and whatever, but whenever people try to be Russian, they do this thing. They really get into the toolbox, but they also just lose it in and out and everything. And it's kind of like in this one, I just kind of wished everybody
Sean Connery and Hunt for Red October and just gone.
Right. Yeah. You just don't do the accent. Don't worry.
I
got it.
I will say though, my wife had never seen Florence Pugh in anything though. And she was shocked to find out she wasn't Russian.
I
mean, yes, you're right. I think Florence Pugh pretty much nailed it.
Right.
I think Rachel Weisz was in and out. Of course, her American accent is not all that convincing. Mm. It never has been to me. Harbour, I think, because he's doing a Malkovich and Rounders type of thing, I think he's pretty good. Ray Winstone just didn't get there. But yeah, you're right. I mean, if you decide we're gonna do this, mm-hmm. you just gotta kind of go with it and see how it goes. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I think you're right. I think they would have been better served. This is why you see Halle Berry as Storm in X-Men lose her accent. This is why you see Wanda, Elizabeth Olsen, lose her accent. Mm-hmm.
Because Scarlett Johansson's never given an accent to the character, right?
No.
She may try to in like one of those movies.
Like when
remember.
She speaks Russian, there's a little bit there, but I think that's pretty natural.
Doesn't she do it in one of those? It's like where she's tied up and the Russian gangsters.
Oh, that's it. That's I think that's her first scene, and I think that's the opening of Avengers, or it's one of the opening, or it's like her first scene.
I actually don't remember.
That's when it's the True Lies thing. Towards the beginning of.
But doesn't she speak in kind of an accent there for a second, and then because she's still in character, and then when she starts beating ass, she starts.
I think she's speaking in Russian with the accent, and mm-hmm. I think she's
because she's doing the whole True Lies thing. Think, like I'm gonna, this is what I'm gonna do to you. Yeah,
mm-hmm. yeah. But no, I think you're right. It even with Florence Pugh, as brilliant as she is, there are a little times where it slips a little bit, but make a choice. Yeah. gotta go with it.
It's fine. It's fine. Yeah. It's not too distracting, but there are times that
I was about to speak about fallopian tubes.
Yeah, exactly. It's like when Tom Hanks and Forrest Gump is all the way through it. He's got that accent until he has to say yes, drill sergeant in the barracks. Because he sounds like Tom Hanks.
Yes, Drill Sergeant!
So it's when they have to raise their voice or do anything like that, that's where it goes. I like the action scenes in this movie.
Yeah. They're certainly, for Marvel standards, they're certainly a little bit above.
It's still, though, the last, like, I don't know, it's like every Marvel movie of late, especially the last like 20 or 30 minutes, I'm just like, I just start really losing interest. Like, cause it just becomes full on, explosions, and it just, nothing about it feels like interesting.
Yeah. When Rachel Weisz, knocks out that fan or whatever, and it starts this whole thing where the, above the clouds fucking red room training site starts falling down from the clouds, then you get into that whole every Marvel movie has to end with some big huge building falling out of the sky or something like that.
It's their Enterprise crashing, like we were joking about the other day with Star Trek movies.
It is exactly that. But overall I was fine with the action. I like the prison mm-hmm. break, and
for sure that was one of my favorites, I think.
Yeah, I thought that was well done. I'm trying to think of what else was in there. I actually like the beginning part where they're running away from the cops and everything at the beginning, and and it ends up getting on that plane and all that. I thought that was pretty good too.
I think even though it was so Jason Bourne, I think that apartment fight was pretty well filmed.
Mm-hmm.
And from my understanding, I think Florence Pugh did at least a decent amount of that work, because she has a background as a dancer. And apparently Kate Shortland was saying, like, let's figure out how to choreograph this according to what you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that came off really well. It was just so Jason Bourne-y. It was so Bourne-y.
It was. It was indeed. Okay. Well, what are you going to give a grade? How are you going to grade this?
I'll go first.
All right.
B plus. I had very moderate. I wouldn't say I had low expectations for this movie, but I had moderate. This was my first. Chris went with my family to see it. This was my first movie in a theater since Bloodshot in March of 2020. So I think that experience, having friends and family around, my son was giggling through the whole thing. I had a great time, and maybe that factored into it, but I liked it a lot more than I anticipated.
Yeah.
John, I think it's definitely got that going for it. It's better than I think, you expected. I was definitely in that vein. I mean, I didn't really have a strong opinion about it either way. I mean, I like the character of Black Widow fine. Scarlett Johansson can obviously carry a movie. I love Florence Pugh and David Harbour. So, I mean, I was interested, and Rachel Weisz. So I was interested in it, but I don't know what I thought it was going to be, but I guess it was probably better than I thought it was going to be. I'm going to give it just a solid B. Because like I said, the last like 20 or 30 minutes, I quickly lost interest in everything going on. I like Ray Winston. I don't think he's a very interesting villain, though. I'm a huge Taskmaster fan, and I actually do like the changes they made with Taskmaster. That aspect of it was kind of cool. Obviously, the performances were good, as we said. So I'm definitely in that B territory.
That mask is fucking rad.
Oh, man. The Taskmaster mask?
Taskmaster. Taskmaster mask is fucking dope.
Mm-hmm.
Love it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'm going to give it a B+ as well. There is something to be said for expectations, although I didn't expect it to be like bad or even average. I think it just barely went above my expectation.
Mm.
It's one of those movies. It's hard. Even though I think it stands alone, it is hard to figure out how this fits in between those two movies, because everything about what happens at the end of Civil War seems to lead you to believe that she goes in hiding and just stays there for, I mean, there are parts in this movie where she's out in fucking public.
Yeah.
And I'm like, this is one of the most famous faces in the world, has to be.
It's a fucking Avenger.
Yeah. And so I didn't quite get that. I mean, I understand you're shoehorning it in and you're just basically saying, just believe this and you do it.
Yeah.
But I overall had a really good time in this movie. So time will tell. But I mean, come on. I can instantly see this as better than Thor: The Dark World.
Oh, I would put this in the upper echelon.
I think this is the lower part of the upper echelon. It's definitely somewhere in the middle, like in, you know, going to the upper echelon. I agree.
I think about movies that I would watch over again a few times. I've watched Captain Marvel. I do not want to pit this as a female-driven movie versus a female-driven movie.
Right.
Just qualitatively. I'm not going to go back to Captain Marvel very often.
Right.
I don't go back to Captain America First Avenger very often.
Right.
I don't go back to Incredible Hulk that often. You know?
I don't rewatch a lot of these.
Even Thor, the first Thor that I like, I don't go back to that very often. I think I will go back to this more often than I will, you know, what we would consider the bottom half of the MCU.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
All right. Well, let's get on into spoilers then.
Miss Basie is Kaiser Soze.
Miss Luke's father is actually Darth Vader. What? She's the sister and the daughter.
No. I'm reading the books.
Trying to think of where there's really much to spoil, honestly. Like, there's not like a lot of revelations in this or anything, I don't think.
Well, the big revelation, you know, I didn't think it was going to do a Mission Impossible thing, just because it didn't seem like that kind of movie up until now. It had a little bit of spy stuff. It had some Bourne stuff where she's traveling around and trying to be incognito, even though she's an Avenger and fucking Scarlett Johansson.
Mm-hmm.
It had some intrigue on who's doing what and, you know, this guy's controlling this and all that. But I did not expect them to lean into, here's the subterfuge as she goes into Ray Winstone's character.
I forgot.
Dreykov. When she went in there, I didn't have any reason that the movie gave me to suspect, oh, this is going to be like a super spy subterfuge type of thing.
Yeah.
So that was surprising to me. And I dug what they did, you know, retconning it and flashing back. Kind of came out of nowhere, but I was cool with it.
I guess they have similar enough body types to where it works. I mean, they are, you know, different heights and stuff like that. But and they've also, well, and the other reason I wouldn't have thought about it is because they did this, right? They did this in Winter Soldier. That might be one of the more famous scenes from Winter Soldier. So
they did, yeah.
Yeah, I thought that was kind of
wasn't it hologram? Well, I guess she was wearing a mask.
Yeah, she was supposed to be like one of the board members or whatever in there with William Hurt.
With Robert Redford.
Oh, yeah, Robert Redford. Sorry. Yes, Robert Redford. William Hurt was incredible. Yeah, never mind. I'm getting my older actors confused.
Right. It kind of gets to the point where you're like wondering why they don't do shit like this more often, right?
Yeah.
Right? It's like the Polyjuice potion and fucking use that shit all the time.
Yeah. I mean, whenever you see something that like clearly tilts things in your favor, why don't you just use this?
When she's out there walking in fucking Budapest, why didn't she fucking like put one of those things on?
Right? I mean, come on, guys. All during this whole scene with her and Winstone, I was sitting there going, now the movie answers this, but I was sitting there going, if she could break her nose or whatever to make it where she doesn't smell the pheromones and all this other stuff, why didn't she just do this from the fucking beginning?
Yeah.
But then of course it's because she needed him to open up that while he's explaining his whole fucking,
here you go, let me show you everything.
Yeah, and I'm going to show you how you get into my password encryptions and everything else so that you know. So I was like, okay, that's why she didn't do it right away. Although I guess the gambit there is that once you show that you can't kill him, he'll just go. That's the thing. How do you plan for this? Once she shows that she can't kill him because of the pheromones or whatever, it's like, well, once you do that, he'll start telling you his whole plan.
The whole thing.
Tell you everything.
I mean, yes, you're right. I think they're trying to hand wave it by saying that as she's provoking him, which I think is a great scene of like, you know, challenging, it's going to sound stupid coming from a dude, but challenging the patriarchy, which is a very clear theme here of saying you're weak. You're a fucking old man sitting up here in a cloud.
Yeah.
Instead of old man yelling at cloud, you're sitting in a cloud.
Yeah.
And the widow's thing is, it just seemed odd. Like, I don't know. Like, I mean, I guess bad guys always have ludicrous plans and a lot of these things, but the Winstone character felt very much like William Stryker from X2.
Yes, he did.
This movie actually felt very Wolverine. Like it, and like I said, the Ray Winstone just felt very Brian Cox-esque, and it felt very much like William Stryker and all that kind of stuff. And just the Widow program in general, like, I mean, I guess the idea is that they would be, you know, a little like people wouldn't expect these women to come out and like start kicking, you know, start killing people, but they're all like wearing like black and they're all, they stand out, you know, it's not like it's like really covert. At least what we saw.
Maybe they explained this somewhere. I didn't see it, but I don't understand why it has to be all women either. If they're going to program them in some sort of way, to be super soldiers and everything. He's claiming that these all come from orphans.
Yeah.
They picked him off the street, and he sort of justifies the things that he does because, hey, they would have been nothing, and they're amazing.
I thought that was an interesting line, and I think that was purposeful for the filmmaker. He's like, I can use the most disposable resource of all, girls.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously,
yeah,
that's not true, but also it makes a point that I think is for this type of movie fairly powerful of saying.
Well, it is.
It's his mindset, right? I mean, that's the one that created all this, and so that was what his thinking was. Yeah, absolutely.
For the longest time I was kind of having a little bit of a, I don't know, a difficult time trying to figure out, cuz I though they do explain this red thing that's an antidote to them and everything, and I don't know if I picked up where this antidote got made. Was it at
it was in the red room. That's why she went down to the cold storage.
They made the antidote in the red room.
Yeah, because they once you have a whole network of spies, you definitely want to keep the antidote to their mind control in the same location where you're training them.
Right.
I think that's just good business.
Yeah, that's what I was sitting there going, why was this antidote ever made?
Yeah, exactly. Because they synthesized it. It wasn't like Dr. Doom or something like that that was doing it.
We didn't even get to see the convenient video that's in every one of these Marvel movies where they were planning on doing it without the antidote, but then they found out that there were some soldiers that went too far and they had to find a way to get them out of it.
They need Toby Jones on a computer.
They needed
They
needed like a training video, like welcome to the Red Room.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
It's going to be super fun.
Have the little
and happy caps. Did I say
animated character?
I meant happy
have the
caps.
Little DNA character from Jurassic Park showing up on there. But yeah, I mean, this is all, comic book stuff that we all, but yeah, it's stored in the exact place where they make the super soldiers.
It's good science. That's solid. Hey, what did you guys think about the dinner scene with the family getting back together? To me, I really enjoyed that scene, but also I felt like it was a little bit indulgent in like the slapstick almost, I think that was more of Kate Shortland's sensibilities coming in and saying, I really want to get intimate with these characters in that sense, the family environment. And I appreciate that because that's something that you never get in these movies. But I thought it kind of just stretched on a wee bit. Did you guys get that sense was it nice?
I will say one thing interesting about it. And if you haven't seen the trailer, this wouldn't affect you, but like, it was interesting watching the trailer because I just assumed they were actually family.
Yeah.
When I watched the trailer. So you get that, you find out obviously before that, that they're not, that that was all an undercover thing and whatnot. And so I think that gives it like a different dynamic. But I could have done without, David Harbour, like explaining that he had been in prison for a while. So he had a lot of energy to expound girl, the Scarlett Johansson and Florence Pugh, like, oh God, like mom and dad are talking about sex. And
right.
Yeah.
I generally like these type of things. I think people need to be reminded a lot of times that family is what you make of it. Mm-hmm. In this situation, it's understandable that there's a lot of anger and distrust because the two girls were so young at the time. They were playing like they were a family and everything. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of what the fuckism going on and all this. But once they get back together and it sort of retreats back into that family dynamic and everything, it's just like fucking Vin Diesel and Fast and the Furious.
They had vodka instead of Coronas.
Yeah, exactly. That was the
what
thing.
About like family.
This is something that I learned way back in like 20 some odd years ago. There were some movies that sort of express this thing. You don't have to actually be related to the people that you mm-hmm. are that you hang out with early on as a family. I remember writing a paper in college about this type of mm-hmm. thing. I think that was Boogie Nights was one of these movies that I brought up in this. And that unit in Boogie Nights is a family. You have the mom and you have, now it's a fucked up family.
Yeah.
Sure if you, if you're, because these people are regularly fucking each other, but that's anyway, right. it's a collective of people who fight for each other and do things for mm-hmm. each other and everything. And that's what it comes down to. And so I generally like those kinds of stories. I don't know why. I had a pretty good, solid family for growing up. So it's not like anything that I'm like, oh, yeah, I relate to that or anything. It's just that I think that you can define family how you want to.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I think there's a reason that like the shawarma scene is, or like the party at the beginning of Age of Ultron, stand out, because I think it's nice in these like, superhero movies where they're having to like save the world and stuff, that they just have like these, real people type moments. That's one thing about the Marvel movies that I always enjoy, when they try to bring that kind of, stuff in there. Mm-hmm. You get a lot of that in like Guardians of the Galaxy.
Huh? Yeah, they try to force it into DC movies, but
yeah,
it seems a little more authentic because I think the actors have good chemistry. What Marvel does, besides getting up and coming directors a lot of times to do these, Chloe Zhao's doing, or Zhao is doing Eternals and things like that, is cast really well, mm-hmm. not only for the characters but also for the chemistry, and I think they nailed it in this one. I think with a different cast, this movie would not have worked.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, I guess you could say that for every movie.
No, but I think you're right, because like, that's what I was saying about David Harbour. Like, I think if you just, I don't know who, I mean, I'm sure somebody else could have done the character okay, but that's not a great character. Mm-hmm. Yeah. If you had cast Vin Diesel in the David mm-hmm. Harbour role, mm-hmm. it wouldn't have worked.
Yeah. Can you imagine just because he's Mr. Family, they decided he would be good for this movie too.
He's got a double role as Groot and Red Guardian.
Yeah, exactly.
But I think in what you were saying, Chris, I think it did feel a little more authentic in this movie, as opposed to the Fast and Furious movies, where that just kind of became something they like kind of beat us over the head with, like, mm-hmm. oh, don't forget we're family and we cook out together mm-hmm. after we go on these crazy spy missions.
So I'm not, I don't care if I am spoiled about this, but I was told that the Julia Louis-Dreyfus character in the end credit scene is in Loki.
No, Falcon and Winter Soldier.
Falcon and the Winter Soldier.
But okay, we were supposed to see her in this first, I believe. I believe that scene was shot for this movie, and that was supposed to come out before Falcon and Winter Soldier.
Was also informed of that. And what is her character? How does she relate to all this? Because I didn't know.
So she is, I mean, I don't remember. Her name is Valentina, but she... she has a lot of people think that there's a team in Marvel Comics that was created in the late 90s called the Thunderbolts. And it was essentially it was led by Baron Zemo, who's obviously was in Civil War. And I can't remember that actor who played him. He was in Falcon and Winter Soldier. Mm-hmm. And it's a team of villains that may or may not be turning into superheroes, kind of like Suicide Squad, but it's different. That's the easiest way I know to explain it. So a lot of people think that's what they're setting up, and she is kind of somebody in the background that kind of works that kind of.
She's the Nick Fury of that group.
Yeah, or the Viola Davis from Suicide Squad. Like,
yeah, although the task that she gives Florence Pugh at the end of this is, I know who killed Black Widow, and it's like Hawkeye, and mm-hmm. like, yeah, I mean, I think a lot of people would like to see Hawkeye die, including Jeremy Renner himself. But,
yeah.
It doesn't seem like it's, that seems malicious to me. That doesn't seem like a superhero type of thing, unless they have a different perspective on this for some reason that makes it seem like he's a villain of something.
And I don't know what that means, because like, there's the Hawkeye show. Yeah. That's going to be on Disney Plus.
Does and it tie into the MASH universe?
Yeah.
So I don't know if if Florence Pugh is going to be on that show. I don't know where they're going with this, but that's definitely what a lot of people think that all this is setting up, is that they're going to introduce the Thunderbolts into the Marvel Cinematic Universe.
And she is shown recruiting another character within Falcon and Winter Soldier.
Correct.
A character that has been on the outs. So it definitely does seem like she's pulling a Nick Fury type of thing, where she's putting together a team. And that team has at least two very skilled characters.
And I don't know how they're going to use them in the movies, but I will say the first run of the comic book series, which I don't know how many issues it was, it ran for a few years, was a really cool storyline that had a really fun like twist at the end. And so I'm really curious to see what they do.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. No, leave me alone. Making fun of me for reading. That's fine.
Mm-hmm. That's right. That's what we always, that's what we do here at Cinema Sins. Anything else that we need to discuss about this movie?
The Taskmaster thing was interesting to me, because that's obviously not the character in the comic books, which, not surprisingly, especially after Iron Man 3, seeing how people reacted to what they did with Mandarin, people are getting really upset and mostly dudes, because, you know, Taskmaster's a man in the comics. But I thought it was great. I thought it served this story well. I guessed it pretty early on, that it was going to be it was Olga Kurylenko, right? Or is that how you say her name?
Olga Kurylenko is how I pronounce it, but you're sounds talking good. About a Russian name. So it's probably like some other kind of like emphasis. So
she's Russian and she doesn't get to talk. So like she probably would have had a really nice Russian accent.
She would have.
I liked that twist. I thought that was fun. I thought that worked really well in the story. And I thought that was an interesting thing to introduce, the whole idea that, you know, we find out early on that Black Widow killed this guy's daughter, or he thought she did. To get to him, and just, you know, so, and that's a hard thing to introduce, right? That, you know, this person we're supposed to be rooting for is a child killer. And the movie kind of makes it work. This, I mean, they kind of play on the outside with it, you know, don't really completely address it. But I thought all that was kind of interesting.
This is always some silly shit to me in movies. I mean, obviously, I didn't know anything about this character or anything, but I mean, obviously, when you hear that Black Widow blew up this building, the daughter didn't die. There's no way the daughter died. The way they talk, she's so guilt ridden about it and all that. It's like, she's just going to show up later. Just don't worry. Don't even worry about it. One day I'm going to make a movie about how certain things happen behind the scenes, you know, of these, like, how does a building blow up and there's this girl in it? She survives.
Good.
She survives the bomb. Mm-hmm. Someone somehow finds her in a hospital, and then just like Ray Winstone, for instance, like, how does he, you know, and goes, I'm going to turn her into a supervillain.
Well, that's his daughter, right?
Is it?
Yeah. That's because she was trying to get to him, and his daughter went.
I guess I totally blanked on the fact that he's the same guy that got blown up. So they both got blown up in that.
They both got blown up, but both. Well, she had some scratches, I guess, but he didn't have any scratches.
I mean, give me a fucking break. I think the thing is that they sat there. They said Dracov a million times in that movie.
They did.
And then when it got to him, I didn't think that was Drago. I just thought that was just a part of the backstory of, you know, whatever. Gotcha. So anyway, that's just one of those, you know, the fucking.
It's also funny the way you said that about, I'm going to create a supervillain. I thought it was interesting that we see all of a sudden Natasha. We see Natasha watching a movie early on, and it's a Bond film. I think that was on purpose, because she basically ends up in a lair at the end, and
everything, and there's a lot of Bond stuff in this. Prison break is so Bond.
I think being a huge Bond fan, I mean, that might be my favorite franchise of all time, like, you know, that aspect of it I did find fun watching this movie. I'm never going to be upset that you're trying to pay homage to Bond. So,
Totally. Yeah. All right. That's going to do it for this mini pod.
Mini pod.
What did you guys think about Black Widow?
You people out there.
What do you mean, you people? we go to Sincast, presented by CinemaSins on Facebook. We're also on CinemaSins Twitter, Music Video Sins Twitter, Discord, and SoundCloud. And where can people find you, Jonathan?
Well, I write for this YouTube channel called CinemaSins.
Fuck and, you.
No,
fuck off.
you can find me on Twitter. I'm at SamLoomis13, and I'm also on Letterboxd. I think I'm just Jonathan Watkins on there. But I also do a podcast every week about the YouTube channels we're all involved with, the Sins channels. It is called Behind the Sins, and it is I do that with Aaron Dicer and the lovely Danae Hughes. So
that's going to do it for this mini pod. It's Chris Atkinson, Barrett Sharon, Jonathan Watkins. We'll see you next time.
Thanks for listening. Comment on our episodes on our SoundCloud page. Check us out on YouTube, Twitter, Facebook, and Reddit. And be sure to visit cinemasins.com.